Senate Revenue Committee Agenda, February 10th, 1981, 1:30 p.m. Hearing Room 137, Review of Estimated Payments, Department of Revenue.
Okay, the committee will come to order. The first order of business is a bill that was sent to us that I'd like to send back to the desk and ask to be re-referred to another committee. Senate Bill 122, dealing with the blanket fidelity bonding of elected officers. And there's a statutory requirement they all be bonded, and this would allow a blanket bond to be secured, apparently. And I just think it's out of the purview. It's a personnel matter more, and I think government activities would be a committee that could look into it. Okay, Senator Crow moves that we send Senate Bill 122 back to the desk with a recommendation that it be referred to the Committee on Government Activities. Is there further discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Senator Hanlon?
Aye.
Senator Jernstein?
Aye.
Senator McFarland?
Aye.
Senator Monroe?
Aye.
Senator Crow?
Aye.
Senator Powell?
Aye. Motion's done. Anything else administratively that we need to do? That's it. Now, if LBD was chairing this, and I had asked for this hearing, he would adjourn the meeting, wouldn't he? And we'd all go back to our offices and get caught up on work. He called the meeting and walked through and left his cigarettes. That's one thing we do. Everybody, you want to take one or two?
Hey, that's just what I need.
Pass them down to your constituents. Left his cigarettes, and then
all not human wrong.
You don't believe that.
Well, I just don't. I hate to start without him, because he's the one that had some constituent input as far as the form is concerned. But I guess we can go on without him, and then he can take it up in private. Is it Greg?
Rick.
Rick, why don't you identify yourself for the record, and we'll go ahead and get started, and maybe you can just start by explaining the form.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Rick Vinnie with the Oregon Department of Revenue. I am the program manager for estimated tax. I am here this afternoon to discuss and review our implementation of the estimated tax program and hopefully address any questions or concerns that you may have. Before I get into the estimated tax program, I would like to take a couple minutes and bring you up to date on where we are in our accelerated program. As you will remember, we agreed during the 1980 special session to accelerate our collection program. And at that time, with no additional resources, we agreed that we would try and collect an additional $10 million over and above our normal collections for the period of September through June. And the first handout that you have, Oregon Department of Revenue Special Collection Project, this is a report of our tracking system that shows exactly where we are in our accelerated collections. What we did to estimate how much we had to collect, we took the total amount collected last year for this time period, increased that by an inflation factor, and added $10 million to that. So we feel that our goals are met if we can collect at least $40,000 or $40,947,000. 5 months is now passed in this program, and we have already collected in excess of $21 million, which is just a bit over 50% of our goal. If you compare January 1981 with January 1980, you will notice that we are ahead by $8 million. That $8 million is attributable to $3 million collected by our own people, existing collectors, $5 million collected by additional people that come into the collection program. And we believe the reason for some of the success is due to our publicity program and a certain efficiency in the collection procedure that we are now doing in the collection division. Do you have any questions on this?
Well, that's pretty good. Do you think you can go for $100 million next biennium? Increase revenues?
Well, we're not. When we get to $40 million, we're going to
stop.
Okay. What is... What is the talk in the department about the future of collections? Going to Ways and Means for more people in that area?
I'm not exactly sure at this time. I do know that, you know, we have real concerns with the people that we have in the collection division. And that there are other areas in our agency that are suffering due to loss of personnel. And that's something that I'm sure we will have the opportunity to discuss with you throughout the session.
Okay. Senator Trill.
Yeah. This accelerated collection program really is, you're collecting from people that normally don't pay or haven't paid.
That's correct. People that have not paid or filed tax returns and have not paid enough due, people that have not paid.
Accelerated just sounds like you're getting money from people in advance of when they would normally be paying.
It does.
Actually, what you're saying is that you're collecting upon people who probably wouldn't pay.
Delinquents.
By delinquents. It's just more dealing with delinquents. Why don't you call it delinquent collection program?
Probably should call it that.
Okay, that is a good point.
I don't think it matters what you call it. It's great that you're generating the revenue, but for the life of me, I can't understand why, you know, we really haven't been conscientious in the past in collecting, so that this would be a new phenomenon that's come about just because we're short of money, but that we would have done everything we could to collect.
Senator Instead?
I think I could almost take a crack at it. But one of the reasons, I think, is the fact that the interest rate on delinquent taxes has been pretty low. And sometimes it's made business sense not to pay your taxes, and especially if you have to borrow money.
It was 20%, isn't it, after 3 months, the penalty? Isn't it?
No.
If they don't pay, failure to pay penalty is 20%. If they don't file too, it's up to 25%.
No, but I mean, if you do not file your income tax form.
Well, if you file it and then don't pay it, what's the interest rate for collection, for delinquent tax?
Okay, if you fail to file?
If you file, but file. Then don't enclose a check.
Okay, it's 5% plus interest.
Yeah.
5% of the tax.
Of the tax.
Okay. Has it always been that high?
As far as I know, yes.
And what's the interest that accrues on top of 5%?
1% per month.
I'd like an answer to my question. Why haven't we just made this high priority to pick up this $10 million that's been out there all along, every buy-in, probably?
Mr. Chairman, my name's Homer Kennedy. I'm the Administrator of the Collection Division. Senator Troll, collection is a part of the compliance program, and we've tried to balance the emphasis between audit work and collection work, and also return processing and the other things that are required in the department. And the past few years, the caseload of delinquent taxes has just been getting greater and greater. It's been increasing faster in the last few years than it did in previous years. And the department has, we've been trying, like I say, trying to balance our compliance program between audit and collection, and we've made a conscious decision during the special session. We asked for additional people in the collection program to do this collection work with so we wouldn't penalize our audit program. And the legislature then asked us to borrow people from other areas in the department to beef up the collection.
How many people did you borrow?
34 full-time people and 5 part-time people.
And did you borrow basically secretarial help, or did you borrow auditors, or what did you borrow?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Troll, it's a mix between auditors, principally auditors.
How many auditors did you borrow?
I don't recall the number. I would say out of the 34, approximately 20 are auditors.
know you do things that cost, clearly, and if you borrow 20 auditors and you put them into making telephone calls and collecting delinquent taxes, the auditing is not being done, or something that's not being done. So how seriously are you bonded over auditing because you've been concentrating on this task?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, this is my personal opinion that the audit program has been, it's been seriously damaged. It's not too bad if it's just for a short period of time. But if you took this many people out of our audit program permanently, it would damage the compliance program.
Do you need auditors to do this?
Yes, sir. We need auditors to do audit work.
Right, of course you do. But do you need auditors to collect delinquent taxes?
Well, not necessarily. No, we've taken some of the people from
other... So you could do this with less expensive personnel?
Yes, sir.
And probably do it just as effectively?
Yes, sir, with some training.
With some training. Okay. So, well, it seems to me like that it ought to be one of our goals to do this all the time, to see if we can get as many of the delinquent taxes paid each time without being able just to move over to that program.
Mr. Chairman?
I'm a bit surprised we haven't done it all along.
Mr. Chairman?
I had, you know, in that same line, I had a high school friend who now is a welfare fraud investigator, and he can't understand why we don't hire more welfare fraud investigators, because he says he pays for his salary the first 2 days of every month. And he says, and that's not climbing all over people, that's just knocking on doors and visually looking and saying, I'm from the state. So those you could, with 20 additional people at lesser salary than auditors, perhaps continue to do this. Is that going to be in your budget? Have you asked for more in the budget?
Yes, sir, we have.
And I think you did, as I recall, wasn't there a request in your budget last time in the regular session for more?
Yes, there was.
No, it was cut.
Yes, cut.
Okay, Mr. Senator Chairman. Monroe.
No, that was Senator Davis.
Oh, Senator Davis, sorry.
You think there's a, I was talking to some people the other day, and you think because in the last few years there's more of a tendency for people to avoid their taxes entirely. You think there's a trend where we've been cited for one of the few countries in the world that we have one of the better percentage of the people that pay their taxes voluntarily. Do you think there's a trend changing where people are actually attempting to make avoidance one of the programs?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dave, we do feel that we have problems in the compliance area. And I am not prepared to discuss those fully with you, with the committee at this time. But we would like to discuss exactly that sometime throughout this session.
Well, I guess, Mr. Chairman, you certainly have the invitation. I think there is a general feeling that perhaps that is becoming more acute. What you're telling me is you feel that you'd like to present a program to us later. What's happening in that area? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, we would like to discuss it from the way we see it.
Just one thing, I noticed a study that was recently done which indicates that about a fourth of the people filling out income tax returns are fudging. I think the word was something else, probably was fudging on the return. And what I'm asking you is if we've taken 20 auditors away from auditing and put them over here in collections, are we likely to lose money simply because we're not catching mistakes or fudging in returns with auditors otherwise employed?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Trow, it is true, you know, if we decrease our audit staff, that means that there will be less audits that we will be able to conduct.
Does that mean then you won't pick up mistakes and generate additional money because of the auditing? Don't you generate additional money because of the auditing?
Yes, we do, and that is...
That would balance off over against this extra money you're picking up over here in collections.
It would. Well, over a long period of time, it would be detrimental to our compliance program.
But even in the short term, you may have that kind of phenomenon. Over here it looks good, but over here we haven't seen, but it may not look so good on this side.
That is true. And I'm not prepared to talk about it, but at some time we would be prepared to come in and show you the impact of the accelerated collection program on the audit division.
Okay. Senator Hanlon, did Senator Trent say?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Troy has kind of asked my question, but I think I want to get into it anyway. We all understand why we went into the accelerated collection program. We needed all the dollars we could get in this biennium. When you talk about a permanent acceleration, I think you have to be able to prove that you're going to collect some money that you wouldn't otherwise get in order to make it pay for itself. Now, if we did more of this sort of thing on a permanent basis, if you got 20 more people, speed up the collection, would you collect more money than you would otherwise get?
Yes, sir, I think we would.
Enough to pay for additional help?
Yes.
Now, that would be the pertinent question.
Senator,
how much money does the state write off on the average every year? Just write it off. It's totally uncollectible.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Jernstedt, this is just off the top of my head. I don't have the figure, but we have to document every case that we write off as being uncollectible. So you understand there's quite a bit of work involved in documenting it. In the last calendar year, 1980, we wrote off, round figures, 2,000 accounts amounting to about $500,000 as uncollectible. Now, that's compared to a total accounts receivable of $50 million.
How long do you go before you write it off? How many years?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Jernstedt, it depends on the particular account. There isn't any statute of limitations on collection. It depends on when we get to the account and what kind of collection work that we have to do on it. Some of the accounts drag out for several years, and we collect some money on them, and then all of a sudden they become uncollectible. So it's kind of hard to put a definite time frame on the charge off.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, Rick, at some point the committee will entertain a hearing where we can simply have the whole collections idea and where we're headed in that direction is as the subject. And, you know, I remember coming in the special session, I had a few people that had been audited recently that said, if you get rid of those auditors, get rid of them. So they must be effective in some way.
It must be some cost effective.
Yeah. Okay, I think that pretty well does it on collections, and thank you for the report. We'll get to the estimated 1981 income tax form 40ES. Why don't, first of all, did you have anything you wanted to say before you had questions or in explaining it? One of the things, Rick, that we've tried to do unsuccessfully, and it's in no way a reflection on you, but the committee has tried, at least for the past couple sessions, to at least get a look-see at forms, not infringing on the department necessarily to authority and privilege of writing the forms, if you can call it a privilege, but more or less looking at it from a constructive criticism point of view as far as simplicity and readability, and also as far as, in some cases, what's actually on the form as far as information to the taxpayer. So with that in mind, hopefully if new forms are created and you have a voice, you might say, might run this by either the Interim Revenue Committee or the Revenue Committees during a regular session. So with that, why don't you go ahead and explain it if you have anything you wanted to explain.
Okay. We certainly, Mr. Chairman, we certainly would have no objections to the Interim Committee reviewing our forms. I think in the case of the 40ES, that our timeline was such that it probably was an impossibility. That coupled with the fact that all of the printing and of the form was done back east really compressed our timeline.
Senator Trump, why was it necessary to do your printing back east?
This type, Mr. Chairman, Senator Troll, this type of packet, when we put out the bid, we only received two bidders, and one was in Buffalo, New York, one was in Chicago. There were no Oregon firms, apparently, that have the capability of printing a form like this.
You have to go to the house where they print all those third-class mailers, the Carolyn Davis bonus award program, Reader's Digest, Clearinghouse, all those.
That's my Carolyn Davis bonus award.
Night out on the town.
Really, yeah, night out on the town.
This form was a crucial form, in order to something like this.
Yeah. We considered quite a few alternatives. In fact, what we did is we contacted the Internal Revenue Service and to see what they had done. And we contacted several of the states that had had 1 or 2 years prior experience, up to 5 and 10 years prior experience with an estimated tax program. And we got information from these sources, and it was our judgment that for Oregon starting out on a brand new program, that this was the best possible way to go. Mr. Chairman, I have a presentation to make on the publicity that the Department of Revenue has done in the estimated tax area. Would you be interested in that?
Well, maybe in sketch, what you've done in that regard. How long will it take?
10 minutes, 15 minutes.
Is there a way to abbreviate that?
I think there would be.
By simply pointing out what you did do. And
right. When we received the estimated tax program from the special session, we were acutely aware of the importance of this program. And furthermore, we felt that a large part of our success would be dependent on our ability to communicate with the people of Oregon. In other words, get the word out, let them know about the program, and furthermore, let them know of their responsibility to comply. To do this, we spent considerable time in the fall of 1980 developing an overall publicity program. That program began in November. It continues today, and it will continue through the rest of the biennium. In November, we had our first news release. We had another news release in January about the time that we mailed out this packet. We plan another news release, two more news releases on or about the critical mailing dates or filing dates of April and June. We contacted several professional associations throughout the state. Our position here was to approach these people and ask them for their help and assistance in publicizing the estimated tax program, and the results we feel are very positive from there. The type of organizations I'm talking about is the Oregon Society of Certified Public Accountants, the Oregon Society of Tax Consultants, Association of LTCs, the IRS, and several people that have their own private newsletters. The results are newsletters like this that are distributed to hundreds of people throughout the state. In this particular one, we received 2 pages of estimated tax coverage. We also have publications, both the income tax form and our non-resident form. Mention estimated tax on the first on the cover, and the first entire page is devoted to estimated tax. The resident package went out to 1,100,000 households throughout the state. The non-resident packet went out based on a mailing list of approximately 50,000 people. Our estimated tax packet, Form 40S, was mailed to approximately 162,300 people. Our public...
Senator Trow, when were those?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Trow, the income tax packets went out on the 26th of December. The estimated tax packet went out on the 15th of January.
Chairman, did these go with the packet?
No, they did not. I will get to that later.
All right.
Another publication we have is publication 17 and a half. This is distributed to in excess of 2,000 tax practitioners throughout the state. The lead-off article in this publication is estimated tax and discusses estimated tax at the tax practitioner level and goes into more detail than any of our other publications. Public appearances. we have encouraged our people to go out and solicit to local civic and business organizations, asking for the opportunity to come to speak to their group on estimated tax. And we have covered the state with this through our 13 district offices. We have provided many seminars and workshops to tax practitioner groups and small business associations. Tonight, our director, deputy director, administrator of the audit division, and chief tax counsel will be addressing the Tax Executive Institute in Portland. One of the topics is going to be estimated tax and the accelerated collection program. We are ready and willing to take part in radio and television talk shows, and we have done that. We're interested in special groups. We are contacting all farmer and fisherman groups for, like, the Grange, for example, the Coastal Fishermen's Association, to explain the program to them, and in their case, if they meet certain qualifications, the fact that they aren't subject to estimated tax. For all the people that where the Department of Revenue sent out the fourth quarter installment billing notice, we included a estimated tax stuffer explaining to them that the installment program is no longer available and that they will have to start estimating their tax. For all the people that paid advanced state tax for 1980, some 15,000 people, when we sent them their credit memo, we automatically included an advanced payment stuffer explaining the estimated tax program. During our return processing, which is happening right now, we are processing no remit returns. These are returns that are filed without payment, part paid returns. And for each one of those billings that we are sending out, we are including an estimated tax stuffer that tells them about the program and reminds them of their responsibility. Also, for every return that's adjusted in return processing, where we are sending out a notice of additional tax due, where we are including a stuffer that explains estimated tax program. Also, in a special compliance problem area of tax protesters, whenever we send out letters for on the W-4 program, where people have excessively are claiming excessive withholding exemptions or are filing exempt, we are reminding them of their responsibility for the estimated tax. And as I say, our publicity program is continuing. We don't expect to slack off, and we are continually trying to think of new ways that we can reach the people, and we're trying to determine the type of people and the groups that we haven't yet reached. We feel good about our publicity program. Generally, we feel that we have reached about everybody that is going to help us with this $75 million.
Any question on the publicity part of it? Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I would now like to discuss our estimated tax packet. As I mentioned before, we mailed this out to 162,000 people that we felt would be subject to the estimated tax. Our intentions were to determine exactly who would be subject and develop a mailing list of just those people. Since the law is based on gross income and we do not maintain gross income figures in our income tax master file, we were not able to tailor the list, and so we had to go more of a shotgun approach and mail to everybody that filed a 1979 return showing a taxable balance of more than $100. And that's why the mailing is 162,000, when we actually feel that the number of vouchers that we will receive with payment will be considerably less. We knew at the time that we were mailing two people that would not be subject to estimated tax, but at the time we had no way to identify who they were. As I mentioned before, we looked at the estimated tax program that the Internal Revenue Service has. We even went down to Ogden, and we looked at the programs of some of the other selected states that we felt had a good overall tax administration policy. And with the information that we got from these states and the federal government, what we try to do is pick out the good parts of their packet or forms and combine all of those into something that we felt would give us the best coverage. And this is the end result. The packet starts off by on page 2, where we ask the taxpayer to follow these steps. We first instruct them to read the instructions in the packet, to complete the worksheet, pages 8 and 9, that's on in the back, and to use the chart on the back of the packet to decide if they must pay estimated tax, to complete Form 40S on page 3, and to keep a record of their payments. That's a general outline of what we wanted them to do.
You shouldn't skip the first. The first page is one I like the best. I can get right through that one. That's a good page though. It explains when the second quarter's due and the fact it's new law and roughly. So you should brag about the first page. I get lost on with all these words.
Okay.
Good.
Or you need to come back. We have a reciprocity agreement with Idaho, and they get charged accordingly for certain income tax.
It's an Idaho resident?
It's an Idaho resident. Works in Oregon, lives in Idaho.
Okay, the Idaho resident would have to pay income tax on 100% of their income, regardless of where it is earned. The Idaho resident would also have to pay tax to the state of Oregon based
on... No reciprocity.
No, there is. There is. Idaho allows a tax credit for the amount of tax that they have to pay to Oregon.
I tell you, that happened to me. I worked in Idaho. I was an Oregon resident. Worked in Idaho for about a 14-month period. At that time, of course, that was back in the 50s. I had to pay tax in both places. Both places. There's no exception. Okay. Very happy about it. Taxes are a little cheaper.
Well, that without going through every line of the worksheet, I think that pretty well does it. Except on the very back, you have a schematic.
Needle gain.
That's probably the most complicated looking thing. But if you read it, it's not.
Yes.
Pretty simple, really.
Yeah, I like it.
It's pretty well done.
The form is good.
Yes.
I think you've done a good job.
We feel it was just another way, you know, graphically, sure, that we could explain the requirements of the program.
I ask you one question on this. He's gone, but when you come back to speak on your tax collection or delinquencies, I hope you'll speak. Maybe go in and it mentions how you can really lower the hammer on people in your news bulletin. You call me and you garnish their wages and attach their bank accounts. But I kind of like to know the process that you go through from step one to until you get to the meltdown. I mean, okay. Would you explain kind of what you must have a procedure which you follow? There's probably so many contacts, and you obviously just don't make one telephone call and say, well, the dirty boobs aren't going to pay their tax and we're going to get them, right?
That is correct. You're not asking me to explain that, are you?
No, I'm asking you when you come forth, I'd like to come back. You're coming back to this committee at a later time to discuss this whole issue, right?
I hope so.
Well, I think you've got an invitation. What I'd like to have you do is to establish that procedure you follow. What is your procedure? What is the standard procedure you have someone in this tax delinquency?
Mr. Chairman, would it be in order for me to make a statement?
Sure, go ahead.
Can that microphone pick me up?
Yeah, I think you can. Can you hear down there? I think so.
Well, by way of background, I have studied accounting for several years. I worked in the CPA office, and I have done my own and others' income tax returns for many years. When I got this, I was sort of flabbergasted. I read it through, and I couldn't figure out what it meant in several areas. First, I have an antipathy toward these multiple forms that when you tear them apart, you usually tear them up. And I didn't realize they were printed back east, but I see now that the I got down to thinking about how could I figure my estimate of tax here and avoid this 480% interest they talk about. My business is one in which I don't know what my salary is for the year until I happen to be in a fiscal year November 30th. I'm sure in your business you don't either. So there's no possible way that I can fill out the estimated tax worksheet because I have no idea what my federal adjusted income will be in 1981 until December 31st of 1981. I also have some interest income, dividends, and things like that that, again, I don't know until close to the end of the year what they're going to be. So I got to reading through and found that there are exceptions to paying this 480% interest if I read them. So I looked up Oregon Laws 1979, Chapter 7, and probably I'm one of the very small minority of people in the state who have access to Oregon Laws. And I found that Chapter 7, Oregon Laws 1979, refers to architects. And I couldn't quite understand why that would affect my liability for interest. So I called the number in Salem that's listed in the packet somewhere and was told that the person who answered the phone didn't know what that chapter was either or what these exceptions were, except they're the same as the federal. I said, well, what are the federal? Well, she didn't know. But she'd have someone call me back. So a couple of hours later, someone called back and still had no idea of what the problem was. Then I got a hold of the young lady who apparently had written this form up in the Revenue Service office. She explained that, apparently that was a mistake. It should be Oregon Law 1980, Chapter 7, which does refer to this estimated tax. I asked her what the federal exceptions were, and she says, well, I don't know. They're the same as the federal exceptions, but we have a publication 17 and a half, which I'll send you. I said, are you sending that out to all the people who must file? No, only the tax practitioners, which would apparently force anyone in my position to go to a paid practitioner if he wants his estimate to be correct. Then I did get a hold of the federal exception and the federal form, and I found that there I can probably avoid interest if I use the same system that I do in figuring my federal estimate, and that is to take my 1981 or my 1980 tax and pay that as my 1981 estimate or the year ahead. And I can't understand why it doesn't simply say in these 10 pages of instructions here that if the total 1981 tax withheld and estimated tax payments equal or exceed the 1981 tax liability, there's no penalty, and to go ahead and file on that basis. And I, from people I have talked to, most of the people who file an estimate for the federal tax use exactly that system. They take this year's tax, and that's next year's estimate. Now, there are two rather conflicting exceptions here, as I read it. The first, I agree with Senator McCarthy that the second thing is not Jim one half. McFarland.
I'm going back to the old boys. It's okay, Joe.
That was what really is a Freudian slip. The second payment should be one quarter of the 1980 liability if we read the page 5 correctly, where it says the first quarter estimated 1981 tax is due on April 15th. The second quarter is due on June 15th. Now, either this is wrong or this is wrong. But to me, it's a grossly complicated form that people who need to file an estimate normally wouldn't have to go through all of this because they're most of their income tax is withheld, and there's really no need to file.
I think perhaps part of the problem is that
it's kind of like skiing. You know, you don't get hurt until you think you know how to ski. That's when you try a move and you end up falling over and breaking your ankle. And some of us, and I'm kind of where you are, know too much for example, I had stumbled onto these exceptions, and I tend to concur. Somewhere in here it should probably say, if you're using a federal exception on your, or an exception on your federal form, Oregon has adopted like exceptions, and you could apply those to meet your liability. At the same time, if you knew nothing about filing an estimate, then this document, I think, makes more sense. That is, if you were a first-year taxpayer and you were going to have to file an estimate, then at least I can follow this form. I could, you know, if I just go back and wipe out my understanding of exceptions and that's and my current existing situation and throw some dollar figures here, I think I could figure it out. But you're right, it is complicated, and I'm not sure that it's possible. It's always possible to do better, but I'm not sure how much easier, outside of what I hear you saying, is that if somewhere in here it would have just told you, look, if you're using a federal system now of using an exception, you can probably use that same exception with the Oregon tax, or that you can.
Or if you don't understand that, there are maybe other exceptions you can call the phone mm-hmm. number. But
now, that's one thing you might think about adding to the form.
I would like to point out that on page 5, where we say the exceptions for Oregon are the same as the federal.
Oh, it does say that?
Yes, federal okay. exceptions. And then we say costs.
Where is that?
That's on page 5, bottom of left column, top of right column.
Okay, there are exceptions to paying interest.
The law you cite is wrong.
Yeah, unfortunately, that is
okay.
in there.
But then you refer to the Oregon chapter, which would indicate that in order to understand these exceptions, you have to read
the rules.
The Oregon law.
Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I think what he's indicating is that it would have been simpler, and I can understand maybe why you don't want to do this, but it would certainly be more straightforward if you simply said on the line back here on the worksheet where it asks a person to estimate their income, he said if it is impossible or very difficult for you to do this, use last year's income or use last year's tax. You know, I understand why you don't want to do that, because hopefully people will owe more tax and this might decrease the amount that they would pay, but you know, it certainly would help out individuals who are in a position of being where it's very difficult for them to guess how much they're going to make. Just say if you can't reasonably estimate your tax liability for the next year, use your tax liability for the existing year.
Yeah, I'd like to point out that we felt that this whole exception area would be a problem, and that is why we have please call us. And when people do call us, we do take them through exception number 1 that says if for each of the quarterly payments you pay 1/4 of last year's tax, basically you're home free and you will not be subject to a penalty. We do tell them on the phone when they call in. And I will consider that as a suggestion.
You don't think it would be appropriate just to write that in here?
It is something that we will surely consider for next year.
I mean, I'm not saying going through and putting in a 4-page thing on all 4 exceptions or anything, but just something very simple, straightforward, that says if you're having trouble estimating and you use your tax from the existing year, we will consider that a good faith attempt to comply with the law.
I've had similar experiences with agencies, however, that when they are in the bulk doing a certain thing, the day you happen to call, maybe somebody was ill or they're filling in or something, and I've had that happen to me, so I appreciate the experience of calling and having that kind of trouble.
And also, pointed out that you hope they owe more and will pay more, but the truth is, what about the people who will owe less and pay the same if they use this estimated.
They get a
besides
refund.
That, we don't even pay them interest, and if it's the other way, they have to pay us interest.
Well, they,
it's our advantage.
They get a refund, of which many people who pay on the as they go along through wages budget for that.
Well, and another thing, the system tends to work in favor of those people who can afford a tax accountant, because the tax accountants all know what the exceptions are, and will recommend that their client estimate as low as he can get away with without paying any interest.
That's,
whereas the poor guy that's trying to do it for himself and doesn't know about those exemptions, he'll be real honest and try to make his estimate higher and actually end up paying more.
That's exactly why H&R Block is using the advertising ploy they are. We can file a 3-year amended form and go back and pick that up, and it's money in your pocket. Come and see us. And they understand that, and they're using that in their advertising, probably as effectively as McDonald's is advertising, or maybe more. And
I've never gone to either one myself.
Well, some of us can eat at the better places. I'm still at McDonald's myself. Okay, thank you very much for your candor. We'll
I'd like to point out one more thing is there is a report on where we are in the estimated tax collection program. To date, we've had 430 vouchers filed, and we've banked $78,000 in our trek to $75
million. Okay, we'll meet here tomorrow on the econometric model that's being designed by the Executive Department for estimating revenues, and it's online and being geared up. Has some figures eventually. No.